Thanks for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. I'm your host, Slade Robertson. For 11 years, I've been a professional intuitive and the author of the blog Shift Your Spirits, where I try to write about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives, psychics, and healers in a program called Automatic Intuition. Today, I have an interview with Frank Butterfield about channeling, what channeling is, how to do it, what it means to be a channel, and what to do if you think you might be one. I love all my interview guests, and all their segments are special for different reasons, but I must say I did personally really dig the middle of this interview with Frank. I guess I should say he brought through a message that really resonated for me in that moment. I felt like he was channeling for me. I asked the question I sometimes ask guests about what message he thinks is missing from the New Age conversation, and he went off about giving up what you're trying to get. I can't even paraphrase it or repeat it, really. It's a twist on the concept of surrender. It's badass and down to earth and yet conceptually elevated. Be sure and listen for that. And of course, as always, there's an oracle segment at the end of the show. So be thinking about a question or concern you have, hold it in your mind, and I'll come back on after the final links and credits and leave you with that extra message. Before I forget, I'd like to say a quick thank you to Angela Brophy and Tina Wisnant, my newest supporters on Patreon. I appreciate all of you who've pledged your support, and I'm really excited to see the new names each week. It demonstrates that you're enjoying the show and want it to continue. That's very encouraging to me, so thank you. Listeners who support the show on Patreon can access bonus Q&A episodes where you guys send in questions, I record answers to them, and they go out to patrons of the show exclusively. There's also a level of support with a free guided meditation, messages from your spirit guides. To find out how you can become a patron, support my time in producing this show, and access the extra bonus content, please go to patreon.com/shiftyourspirits. This week's interview with Master Channel Frank Butterfield is a nice length, so I'm going to cut my personal intro here. Let's listen to Frank.
Well, my name is Frank Butterfield, and I am a channel, first and foremost. I've been doing that since 1990, although I've done a lot of other things, and I also am an author. I've published 19 novels and three nonfiction books that are based on my channeling work. I live in Daytona Beach, Florida, right at the end of the road, and go to the beach as often as I can, and have a pretty wonderful life. It's pretty quiet, and I'm really enjoying where I'm at. So, and I'm also really glad to be here.
Thank you for being here. So what is channeling? For somebody who's never heard of that before, what is it, and how do you do it?
The way I do it, and it's a good question, because there's a lot of different ways that people define channeling. But the way that I do it is I basically sit, I allow an energy, what I call a broader non-physical perspective, to come through and sit in me, and then it speaks through me. And so communion of light is sort of the name that's used to describe what's going on. And then the energy, the voice that talks through me, has a name called Paul. That theoretically is supposedly connected to St. Paul, formerly Saul of Tarsus, but I don't really put a lot of stock into that. But in any event, it is very distinct. It speaks in a very different voice than I do, although our voices are now more similar than ever before. But now that I'm much more used to it and have been doing it for a long time, but the way in which they talk, and I do speak of them as a plural, with other people is very different than the way I do. They get away with a lot of shit that I wouldn't dare let myself do. But essentially, channeling is, for me, is just literally sitting inside of myself, not reaching up or out, but sitting inside myself and opening up something that then comes down into me and then moves through me. If you want to talk about chakras, what I'm doing is sitting in my heart chakra and then letting my throat chakra be open. And that's all that it is. It's really simple. It's very simple now. Of course, it wasn't simple at the beginning, but that's what it is. What it isn't is mediumship. I can do mediumship. I don't like it, but basically, what mediumship is for me is there's an energy that sits on my right and sort of whispers in my ear, and then I relay what they're saying to whoever the mediumship experience is for. I haven't done it in a long time, and I don't really have any desire to do it. There are lots of really great mediums out there, but mediumship and channeling are not the same thing. Mediumship, I like to consider to be sort of on the sixth chakra level. So it's more of a psychic experience that involves personality to personality interaction. Channeling, the way that I do it, is more of a seventh chakra perspective, where it's about a broader perspective narrowing itself down through me. Whereas mediumship is very peer to peer, and channeling, the way that I do it, is a little bit different than that.
Okay, so how did you discover that you had the ability to do this?
Well, I don't know that that's a really good question. The way I found out how to do it was that I was working at a metaphysical bookstore that is sadly closed called Fields Books on Polk Street in San Francisco. And they had a book there that they were selling called Opening to Channel by Sanaya Roman and Dwayne Packer, which is still available, and I highly recommend it. And I bought it, took it home, and basically over the course of one afternoon, I don't recommend this, I sat down and kind of went through all the processes as fast as I could. And by that evening, something was talking through me. It was really difficult, but it happened. And it's, you know, what's interesting is it's not so much an ability as it is an interest. And I believe that's true about anything at all, that no one really has innate abilities, but people cultivate ideas because they're interested in them. And then they just get better and better at them through practice or through repetition or whatever it may be.
Okay. So when you were saying that you were aware that something was speaking through you, so were you in a trance when this happened, or were you consciously aware of it? Explain the distinction there in your awareness.
Well, my exposure to channeling prior to that was through reading the works of Jane Roberts and seeing the made-for-TV movie Out on a Limb that was a Shirley MacLaine project based on the novel or the nonfiction book she wrote. And they filmed two different channels, and those two different channels actually sort of represent the distinction that I was talking about a little earlier. One of the channels was more of a medium, and one of the channels was more of a sort of broader perspective kind of person. But in any event, one of them obviously went into a very deep trance, and the other one sort of went into a lighter trance. Jane Roberts went into a very deep trance, apparently, from the way it was described in the writings. As did Edgar Cayce, but who's another channel who predates Jane Roberts. But I, at the when I first was doing this, I was in, it was like I was in a hypnotic state. I was aware of what was going on, but I had a thing to do. And my job was to be open, which at the beginning was difficult, but became easier and easier and easier. Now I can move back and forth very easily between the two states. I've never really been a deep trance channel, and I don't have the personality for it. I just kind of refuse to do anything that where I'm absent from the process. But I can also say that when I am channeling, there are plenty of times when I have no idea. I know that specific words like the brown dog, I know that the and brown and dog were said. But I don't understand why they were said. I don't know what that meant. And I don't really, and I've learned to not care. That took a while. But it's not, so it's not a deep trance. It's not a deep trance. And there's some people who can do that, and they're very good at it. And they just kind of get knocked out. Sanaya Roman talks about that in her experience, that her first experience channeling was she turned on a tape recorder, she fell asleep, and then she woke up 30 minutes later, and there was 30 minutes of words that she didn't remember. She just thought she was asleep the entire time. I've never had that experience. But I do sort of fade away and then come back. And time moves in a very different way than when I'm doing something like this, where I'm very aware of the passage of time. A long period of time will go by and I'll think it's only been 10 or 15 minutes.
How long was it from the time that you first tried this in San Francisco, sort of as an experiment, How long was it from the time that that happened until you met Paul, or the communion of light sort of revealed itself?
So there's kind of three stages. So from 1990 to the winter of 1991 into 92, I was channeling this voice that called itself Raji, which is an Indian first name. And it said very clearly, like, I'm here to help you get started. And then when we're done, I'll be gone and I'll move on. And the winter of 91-92, I lived in Provincetown on the end of Cape Cod, and I was with a group that was reading A Course in Miracles. And one night, we were playing around with a Ouija board, and the Ouija board said, tell Frank to channel. And so I opened up, and this very different thing happened, a very different voice, and Raji was gone and has never been back. So from that 90, I guess that was actually like January of 92 until June of 2007, I was channeling this sort of indeterminate, just very broad, non-personality driven energy, which I now recognize was the communion of light. That's who they were. But that was where I was and my ability and my interest in allowing them. I was kind of going around saying, I'm kind of a channel. I should be a channel. I should be doing this, but I'm not really doing it. And then in that interim time, in those 15 years, I went from being a person who kind of bopped around the country to like getting a real job and then becoming really successful really quickly. And then all of a sudden remembering that I didn't have to do that anymore. And so I had a real job for about 10 years, and then I just quit. And I walked around for about a year, year and a half saying, there's something I know how to do that I probably should be doing, but I don't know what it is. And it was channeling. And I remember having lunch with a friend of mine saying, I know there's something that I do that I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm going to come back to you at some point and say, you know what that thing was? And that was right. It was like a Thursday night, and a friend of mine, my roommate and I had gone to see a movie. We came back to the apartment. We sat down, and I just said, I think I'm supposed to channel for you. It just all of a sudden occurred to me. And so when I opened my mouth, this more focused version of what I had been doing over the previous 15 years appeared and kind of gave itself a definition in a way that it didn't have before. And it had a more, not really a personality, but a more clear notion of what it was. And it began to speak. And then in that first night, introduced themselves. They were like, Frank should do this and this and this, none of which I did. And then they, when it was kind of over with, when they helped my friend with a question about his career, and which apparently was very useful because he actually did what they suggested. And then they said, okay, well, now we're going to show you how to be a medium. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And they brought his mother in, and who I'd never met, and then gave, very, like all good mediums, they gave like 3 points of identifying information that I had no idea about, but that gave my friend the clue that there was something going on. And we even had what the spiritualists would call a demonstration. There was an aroma of roses went through this room that was completely sealed off and just had air conditioning on. And it was pretty amazing. And I did that, like I said, I did that for a little while. And then I was like, yeah, that's not really me. And I now realize what they were doing was saying, okay, here's a little bag of tricks that you think you're supposed to have. Why don't you go play with them and see if you like them? And I didn't like any of them. So I just became a channel. And that was, I'm sure this is on your list of things to ask me, but that was about 2 months before I talked to you.
Oh, okay, yeah. I mean, one of the things that I'm enjoying about this conversation, for the record, for those of you who are listening, I have known you and observed from outside the experience, but I was curious about, I've heard these stories too. So I'm sitting here putting it all together as the timeline. So you're saying this is where I came into knowing you.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. So, keep going. This is fascinating.
Well, so I did that for a couple months. I was just kind of trying to figure out what to do with my life. And then I kind of came to a crisis where I was trying to understand what it meant to be a channel. What did it mean I was going to have to give up myself, which is what I had always believed. I think that's why I always dabbled with it, that I was going to have to give up my personality and my sense of self. And I had a project at the time where I was interviewing people, and I can't even remember what the topic was, but you were one of the people that I interviewed for some, like it was a podcast, or I don't know what I was doing, but it somehow, that's how I got in touch with you. And then about a week after we talked, I don't know how I got in touch with you, but I just was like, I need help. I'm having a nervous breakdown. And you kind of like walked me through like, no, I don't remember what you said, but what I got out of it was there's you as the channel, and then there's you as Frank, and it's just like a job. You're going to like put on this hat, and then when you're done with the hat, with the job, you take off the hat. And I was like, oh yeah, of course. And so what's interesting is what has actually happened is that through the channeling and through what I've been doing since then, I have become more of myself, not less. And I have become like more at peace with different idiosyncratic aspects of myself and different parts of my personality. And everything has sort of folded in together instead of being these wildly disparate parts that I was really scared of. And now everything is more integrated. So it's exactly the opposite of what I was afraid of. Hmm. But that's how we met. And then the next significant thing that happened was that about a month after we talked, at this point I was living in Dallas, which is itself a weird story because I had lived in Austin, and nobody goes from Austin to Dallas. Everybody goes from Dallas to Austin because they're like, I'm tired of living this big city life. I'm going to go someplace where everybody's cool. So I did the opposite. But in doing so, I met a group of people in Fort Worth, of all places, who were Abraham devotees. And Abraham, I'd always been like, oh, I'd seen the books. I'd never picked one up. And I thought, oh, Abraham, Sarah, Esther, I get it. Bible, Bible, Bible. This is just more of that old, like, New Thought crap where everything has to be biblically based. Of course, I didn't read anything. I didn't know what they were talking about. But I was like, eh, whatever. So I go to this group in Fort Worth, and then there's going to be an Abraham workshop down in San Antonio. So they're all just, as Abraham people do, completely, completely over the moon about this opportunity. And they're like, you have to go with us. And so I did, even though I really didn't have the money. Somebody actually paid for me to go, which was really sweet. So we get there. And of course, being this group, we got there as soon as the doors opened. And so we then sat in chairs for an hour and a half waiting for the thing to start because everybody wanted to be right up front. And we get in there, and I'm just like, okay. Then suddenly, like, the room's filling up, and it's, like, time to start. And I suddenly became aware of the presence of Abraham as an energy. And it was just really obvious. And then as soon as the way I imagined it, the way I saw it was that, like, up at the top of the room, there was, like, people waiting, like, people waiting for the warehouse to open or for the factory to open to start their shift. And they were all standing around smoking cigarettes and shooting the breeze. And then all of a sudden the shift started and it all coalesced as a single energy right at the center of the room. And it was just, I wasn't imagining this. It was literally what I saw, but that's how I interpreted it. And then as soon as that coalescing happened, Esther Hicks and her husband, Jerry, walked in the door. And Esther's the woman who channels Abraham. They walked in the door and then we started. The first part of the workshop was amazing. There were one after another of people asking questions. And it was really, really amazing to sit there and watch Esther do her thing. Because I could see what she was doing. As a channel, I mean, I knew enough about what I was doing already to see how she was handling the energy. What was fascinating was a guy comes up, the last question of the first segment. So before the first break. And he's missing an arm, missing his right arm and missing his right leg. And he walks up and he sits down in the chair and he says, I want my arm and my leg back. Just like that. That's literally his opening question. And I saw Esther kind of pop out and look around at the room and be like, how the hell am I going to do this? Which I very much recognized. And then she popped back in. And then Abraham began to do something that I'm now very familiar with and was kind of like helping him begin to open up to possibilities instead of seeing a big leap from I'm missing limbs to I want to have the limbs back, began to walk him through the ideas of what could possibly happen. And a lot of it was about being willing to be like the coolest guinea pig who tests out new prosthetics, which I thought was amazing. But it was just this really great conversation. When that was over with, because I didn't know myself like I know myself now, I didn't do this, but I immediately wanted to get up and drive back to Dallas. I did not want to stay for the rest of the workshop. But because I was there with this group of people and this person had paid for me to be there, I stayed. What a friend of mine who was in that group said to me later was that she said, I thought you just looked so angry after that first break. And I said, well, I wasn't angry. I just was very uncomfortable. And what I ended up doing was I ended up getting all the way to the back of the room. I wanted to be there because I felt like I was doing homework or studying something. And I wanted to be in the room, but I didn't want to be in the room. And I went all the way, 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 way into the back. And that's the only Abraham workshop I've ever been to. And I would never go to one again. I might change my mind. And it's not because the work isn't amazing. It's just because it's not me and it's not for me. But the next thing that happened after that was about 6 months later, after I was still kind of dabbling a little bit and hadn't really said, okay, I'm a channel and this is what I do. I ended up back in Austin. And the way Communion of Light describes this is, or the way Paul describes this is, that they sent me to Abraham School, which is, that's really the best way to put it. I just suddenly had an idea one day, and I realized there was this Law of Attraction group in Austin that was kind of sitting there with nobody running it. And I had been part of that before I'd moved to Dallas. And I was coming back to Austin, so I thought, well, great, I'll just take over this group. It was one of those meetup groups. And we'll just study Asking It Is Given, which is the big Abraham book. And so I did, I don't know why it came to me, but I set up this little agenda and something I would never even normally do. And, you know, like we're going to do chapters 1, 2, 3 first week and then 4, 5, 6 and then 7, 8, 9. And I stood up at the front, I explained, we went through that book and then we went through another book and then we did the first book again. And then I set up a second group. And then both of the groups ended at the same time, the study of whatever books we were looking at after about 6 months. And then I was done. And by then I knew if it felt better to leave, to just leave. And that's when I started kind of my practice that I do now and the work that I do now. And that's when clients began to come to me and began to show up. And I started being able to make a living doing what I do now. And that was what was also fascinating about that is that at the beginning, the first year or two, I got lots of people who were saying, well, there were two groups. One group would say, I've gotten everything from Abraham I can get. And so now I found you. And now I feel like all of my questions are being answered, because that is the difference between Paul and Abraham, is Paul directly answers the questions that people ask, whereas Abraham will take the questions and use them as examples for teaching. And Paul will say very clearly, we don't teach, we remind. And that's a big part of what they talk about. And they're always kind of reminding people that that's what they're doing. So that was one group. But then there was another group, much smaller, who would kind of show up. They would sort of pop their head up somewhere and say, you're just copying Esther. And I'm like, you need to come and see that this is very different. But it took me a while to be able to realize that I was right when I said that, because I would, every time someone would show up to say that, I would sort of think, well, maybe they're right. Maybe I'm just mimicking. And then I would ask people who'd been to like every single Abraham workshop since 1993 and say, is this the same? And they would say, no, it's absolutely different. The words are enough the same to where I don't get lost. And that's when I began to realize, oh, that's why I went to Abraham school, was so that I would learn that language. So that happened for the next couple of years. And then by about 2010, I was in my element and I was rocking and rolling. And that's what's been going on ever since. So, getting better and better, but, you know, pretty much.
Yeah, so currently, I mean, because I've been to live events like what you described, the the trans channeling event that I went to was a much smaller, like a circle, you know, kind of thing, like 20 people. It wasn't a full on, you know, conference hall kind of experience. But channeling is obviously different than what most people expect from like a psychic reading. And
yes.
So, you know, just kind of describe for people, how do you do your work? Like, how do your followers, your clients experience these messages? How do you put them out there?
Well, the way people, I don't know how people find me because I don't advertise. They just show up, and that's perfect. That's exactly right. But in terms of how I interact with people or how they interact with Paul, I have three different types of experiences that people can get into. First, there's a thing that's been going on since 2010 called The Village, which is just a series of weekly calls that happen twice a week now. It used to be three times, but now twice. And it's open. You bring whatever question you have, and there are people from all over the world who come into those calls. The other thing that I do, and I don't do it every week, but almost every week, is I have a Saturday through Friday series of conversations that happen at the same time every day, 10 a.m. Eastern time. And people come in with, there's like a little, it's on a specific topic, and there'll be like a 10 to 15 minute initial sort of conversation about it, and then time for people to ask questions after that. And so that's, you know, that's one way of sort of kind of coming in a little bit closer, because those conversations are much more intimate, and they're very specific. So people come in with specific questions on this specific topic. Like, it might be their self-image, body, creativity, their work, money, or just general metaphysics sometimes. So there's that. And then I also do private sessions where people can talk one-on-one. And one of the strategies, for lack of a better way of putting it, that I've developed is I kind of keep the private sessions over to the side. Because there was a period of time when I had what I like to call looky-loos, who came in and would like to do one private session, and they would not read any of the things that I had written about what a session is like. And they would come in and be like, tell me about my Aunt Esther. And I'm like, and Paul would basically read them the riot act and say, this is not fortune telling. This is not that. This is not mediumship. There are other people. Go to them. But if you want to find out about you in relationship to your Aunt Esther, whether she's alive or dead, we can talk about that. But we can't tell you about her because we're not talking to her. We're talking to you. And that, I began to realize, like, so now in terms of pricing, like if somebody comes to the website, you can book a private session, but it's going to cost a whole lot of money. And I do that specifically because I don't want people just coming in off the street doing that. I'd rather them go in through either the village or through actually the morning series calls, because it's a really good way to kind of get exposed to the material. I also have tons of samples. I don't even know how many hours now, but lots and lots of them. So there's lots of opportunities to sort of hear what it's like and then decide if it's right, because it isn't right for everybody. And I would not suggest that anyone who generally considers themselves to be a psychic or to be interested in intuitive development, like, you know, a lot of the people that you work with, that's not going to be enough. You're going to want to have something a little bit more, because I don't like to say that this is advanced material, because it isn't. But we talk a lot about things that I, as far as I know, are not being discussed anywhere else. But then again, I don't really know, because I don't pay attention to what anyone else is doing. But I do know that Paul is very direct with people and is very clear. And that's not for everybody, because some people, and I do hold you responsible for this, by the way, Slade.
Why?
That thing that you say, where like, 83% less flowers.
Oh, okay.
it comes from that. It literally comes from that, because there was something that there was, like, the first time I ever saw your website and I saw that, it like a bell went off, and I thought, of course, that's actually what makes what I'm doing very different, because there's no soft pedaling. It's not hard information. It's not scary information. It's just very direct. It's like, you are doing this and you can do something different. which is very different than saying, well, you know, some people do it in this way, and then you could maybe think about doing it in that way. It's very direct, like very gets right to the heart of the matter of whatever the person is bringing to the table, which I very much love, because it's, to me, that's the most useful thing you can do. But it's not what everybody wants, and I wouldn't pretend to think that that would be right for any particular specific person. Only the other person is going to know. I would never know. So that's why I like to kind of give people the ability to like sort of float in and float out and see what they like and what they don't. And then if they want to go deeper, there's lots of other opportunities to do that.
You'd be the perfect person to ask the question about what kind of message do you feel like, perhaps it's something that comes through when you're doing these sessions with Paul and the Communion of Light, a message that you feel like is missing from a lot of other New Age channels. And I don't mean channel in the literal sense. I just mean any kind of platform that produces these types of conversations, this type of subject matter. Is there something that you sort of want to put out there that you don't feel gets said enough?
Well, if you want to hear, yes, there is one very specific thing. But it's kind of an asshole-y thing for me to say.
That's
so,
all right.
Okay. So it's that, it's basically, can I, how much can I curse?
You can curse all you want to. I'll just put a little red E on the episode.
Okay. Stop fucking manipulating the universe. Stop trying to manipulate the universe to give you what you want. It doesn't work. And I know you agree with me on this. Well, actually, I don't know that. I suspect you do. But what I hear a lot of New Age people saying is, here's how you're going to sort of convince the universe to be on your side. And that's not the way it works. The universe is absolutely positively on your side in a way that you can't even begin to comprehend, because there's no person who is on your side the way the universe is. Because every person has an axe to grind. Mm. And that makes them distinct from you. That's part of the setup of physical reality, is that there's a distinction between you and someone else. And the distinction is not the body, but rather the intention that caused the body to happen. So the thing that really, it doesn't bother me. It just is like, it's, there's a lot of like, how can I massage the universe? How can I convince the universe to do what I want it to do? You can't control it, but you can direct it. But directing and controlling are two very, very different things. You can direct and say, this is the intention that I have. And then you have to step back and let it happen. And you can't control it. And there's sort of an idea sort of in the New Age, New Thought arena, where if I can figure out how to control my mind, control my body, control my events, control my circumstances, control my situations, control my relationships, then I'll get all the things that I want. But that's impossible. Mm-hmm. You literally can't control any of those things.
Yeah.
Because control is the illusion that we generate because we believe, and this is getting right to the heart of stuff Paul talks about, because we believe we live in a chaotic universe and we are supposed to be controlling things. It's not just something that people do who have a pathology. It's what you're supposed to do, because otherwise you are going to get in a shitload of trouble.
So what can we do instead? How should we orient ourselves away from that in another direction?
Well, my favorite thing that Paul says is give up now, give up early, give up often, give up immediately, give up constantly. Always give up. Always give up. And that's another one of those New Age things where people will come around and be like, never give up, hold on to your dreams. Like, no, actually give up your dreams. Not because you're now giving them away and you're never going to have them again, but because the universe actually, it's not like the universe ever forgot that you had a dream, and it's not your job to work on it. So the practical, most practical thing, in my opinion, is to be willing to let go of whatever it is that you're trying to get.
Mm.
But the key there is willing. It's amazing how many people will say, I don't want to give up what I'm working on. Well, you don't have to give up on it. Just be willing to give up on it. And the way Paul puts that is somebody will say, well, I'm intending to create this experience. And they'll say, okay, first and foremost, are you willing to not have it? And of course, you know, even people who've been asked that question many times will say, no, I'm not. I really, really, I need it. I want it. I've got to have it. I've got to get it. And they'll say, well, you're going to have a very hard time getting to it, because as long as you need it, you're always going to be in a state of needing it. And that means it will be over there, not over here. You don't accomplish needing something by getting to it and making it happen. Even the people you think are doing that, even when you think you've done it in the past, that's not how it happened. It happened because you let go of it long enough for it to come to you. Because that's the way this is designed. Everything comes to you. Nothing is supposed, you're not supposed to be reaching out for anything. You can, and it's okay if you do, but let it come to you, because everything is designed to come to you, but not in the sort of like Shirley Temple, good ship, lollipop sort of way that most people think that means. Like, well, then everything will be exactly perfect. No, shit is still going to happen, but you need shit to happen. Because that's part of the physical experience. That's how you define the difference between one thing and another, is by noticing this is something I don't want. And so that gives you the opportunity to decide, well, this is something I do want. But not want as a need, but want as in have a preference for or have an affinity for. Hmm. And as I've begun to kind of, for myself, as I've begun to sort of really take a lot of this in and trying to walk as much of the talk that comes out of my mouth as I can, what I've noticed is my desire for stuff has diminished greatly.
Mm.
Whereas I thought, I was always afraid for a long time that, you know, all of this talk of how manifestation works and creating your own reality, I would end up like being very greedy. But actually the exact opposite has happened. And I find myself more delighted to be in the midst of what I'm beginning to realize other people are probably judging me for it, which I don't really give a shit about. And I don't give a shit about it. They're like, well, you should be, and I say this very jokingly, you're as good as Esther. Why don't you have 3 houses and 15 gazillion clients and, you know, selling 19,000 best-selling books, because blah, blah, you're not working, you're not doing what you're supposed to do. And I'm like, no, I'm doing exactly what I want to do. And I don't want any of that. I thought I wanted it because it seemed like this very like good ship lollipop kind of thing that would be really great to have. And then I would be in the middle of all of this, whatever it is that she has. And I don't want what she has. I mean, I love that she has it. I think it's fabulous, but I don't want it. And this sounds much loftier and much more exalted than I mean it. It's just being willing to give up what it is that I thought I wanted has allowed me to discover what it is that I truly, truly, truly love, which I feel like I've just barely scraped the surface of.
That was awesome. I love all of that. I'm just taking it in. I'm glad I asked you that question. It was a last minute add. All right, let's switch gears just a little bit. There's somebody out there listening, right, who feels like they might be emerging as a channel. They're going through that experience that you were going through, you know, 10 years ago. So what do you recommend that they do first?
Well, that's a really good question. It would depend. And so I'll give a couple of scenarios. So the story that I've told about my own process is stretched out because I'm really stubborn. But I also had to kind of learn who I was. And that didn't happen until I turned 40, really, truly. And that was 10 years ago. So that all that summer of 2007 stuff was right after I turned 40. And that's kind of when I became a real person, in my opinion. Because everything else I'd been doing was, I was trying to like satisfy other people's desires. And that's, if you're willing to become a channel, you're going to discover all of the shit that you've been trying to pull on yourself your entire life, that you can't get away from it. And that's not for everybody. But the simple, most practical thing I would do is I would either get a coach, a mentor, someone else who's done it, or really go to the basics, which is that book. There's never been a better book written on this topic than Opening to Channel. It is, and if you do what they say in the way that they say it, and you do it in the order and in the amount of time it takes, not one day, but over a series of weeks into months, it will work. You'll also discover what it is that you're really wanting. when back in that summer of 2007, there was a guy that I knew in Dallas who I went and had lunch with one day, and I was telling him about it was after I'd been to San Antonio, and I was telling him about what I had seen and what had happened and all that. And he, because his way of teaching is to be an asshole. So what he did was he said, "This is all about your ego." And I was like, "Well, yes, but except for the part where I've done this long enough to know that it isn't about my ego. I would be willing to walk away from it. I'm not trying to do this to become famous or become like, although I probably didn't say that at the time, but I was pretty obviously, I was pretty aware of it at the time. But what he was pointing out was, you're going to get to sit in all of your stuff. And it's not for the faint of heart. And I'm not saying it's hard. This is actually a very simple thing to do. It's just that it requires you to move into a place psychologically, mentally, energetically, where you're willing to let go of what you think is supposed to happen. And for me, as a daily practice, that's what channeling is it allows me to sit and let something much bigger than me happen through me. And to be willing to not have to figure out what I'm going to say next or how I'm going to do it or how I'm going to show up. Just to be able to recognize the right people, right place, right time, right way is what's going on always. So the willingness to fall back into that and to be open to it is first and foremost. And when I say willingness, I don't mean ability to do that. It's willingness, because everybody has the ability to do that already organically. As a part of their nature, the willingness is where the rub is. If you're willing to let it happen, it will happen. But you don't, and it's not 100% willingness, it's just a little bit, in my experience. So, again, the practical thing is A, get help. Don't do it by yourself. Even if that means just a book, or because they also did a set of recordings, Sanaya and Dwayne did, on this for that book. Get someone else to help you, and be aware of the fact that not mediumship, which is a very, very different thing, but channeling, as in just letting this energy come through you, is about being willing to let something bigger than how you perceive yourself happen. And it sounds really exalted and like, oh my God, that's of course exactly what everyone and all people should be doing, but it's scary as shit. Because when the rubber meets the road, you've still got your identity of yourself and how you are holding yourself together and what you're supposed to be doing to make things happen. And channeling will challenge that. Hmm. It's not difficult, and it's not really as scary as I'm making it sound. It's just that it's like a very fast course of psychotherapy.
Well, it sounds like if you are listening to this and you feel like that is your path, the easiest thing for you to do as a human being, period, is to simply move into it and move through it, right?
Yeah. And it's not going to feel simple, but it is the simplest thing.
Right. I don't want to run out of time, and I could talk to you all day, and we could just go and go, and actually people could just go to you and listen to more of you. But I want to give you an opportunity to talk about, you have a new book that just came out today called This Morning Over Here, A Memoir That Never Happened. Tell us about that.
Well, briefly, it's a little novella that I wrote about a month ago as just something that came to me, and it's a story about me moving over into what Paul likes to call a parallel reality. And I just wake up one morning and I have everything that I've ever wanted, but I don't have everything that I know. And it's sort of like a 24-hour period of walking through this reality, trying to figure out who I am now. And I wrote it, it's kind of in the tradition of Jane Roberts, the Oversoul 7 series of books. And, you know, like taking some of these ideas and putting them into practice. But hilariously, because I knew I was going to release this today, I asked Paul, like, okay, could this actually happen? Because I knew they were involved in this. In fact, they're quoted in the book to a certain extent. And they were like, no, you can't, you literally can't do that. And they explained why in a lot of detail, much longer than we have here. But they said, but thinking about it is a really helpful thing, because being aware of the fact that every idea manifests, it just may not manifest with you, is a very powerful thought. And there's a lot you can do with that. So I really enjoyed the process of writing the book. I really love the story for a variety of reasons. And it was one of those experiences where exactly what they said yesterday is exactly what I discovered, which was, as I wrote the book, I could see the me that moved over into this other reality started kicking ass a little bit more than I normally do. And I was kind of like, oh, I like that. I like what's going on over here. And it wasn't the stuff. It was the, like, what happened in my personality, how I adapted to it. So it was fun to write, and it's a really quick read. It's only like 24,000 words, so it's maybe a couple of hours at the most. And I just had a lot of fun with it. And it's up on Amazon, so...
Links in the show notes. I'll put a link in there for sure. So, Frank, it's been really wonderful just to kind of hear your story laid out in a chronological fashion like that. Tell everyone where they can go online to find you.
So it's really easy. Just go to communionoflight.com. So communion, like the word, of light.com. And there's a bunch of things there. You can contact me through there. You can listen to hundreds of hours of samples of things that I've done over the last 10 years or last 7 years, really. And or you can jump in and enjoy some of the things that we're doing, and get in touch. Let me know you heard this conversation. I'd love to talk to anyone about the topic of channeling or whatever it is that comes up for you. And so that's where you can find me. That's where I'm at.
Well, I feel really honored to get to capture some of your time and wisdom today. It was really terrific. Thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you. It was a real pleasure, and what a lot of fun as always to talk with you.
Thanks again for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. For show notes, links, transcripts, and all the past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher or whatever app you use to access podcasts. If you'd like to get an intuitive reading with me or download a free ebook and meditation to help you connect with your guides, please go to sladeroberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive training program, you can start the course for free by downloading the attunement at automaticintuition.com. Before I go, I promise to leave you a message and answer to a question or a concern you may have. So take a moment to think about that. Hold it in your mind or speak it out loud. I'll pause for just a few seconds right now. Do it or don't do it. When it comes to purpose, at some point it's about action and it's a choice. It's a decision you make. But just keep in mind, if you've been given something really wonderful to share with the world, it's not selfish for you to do so. It's the exact opposite. It's terrible for you to withhold your gift. Let us have it. And I'll talk to you later.